Number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. I'm your host, Vinnie Eastwood, and unlike many hosts on this network, I'm from New Zealand. So the interesting part is, I wanted to think about this of recent times, is that we're now entering into an international community whether or not we like it. Now, I'm very concerned by this development. Very concerned. Specifically because I don't like the idea of any kind of globalism. I don't think that the world needs to unite on any front. Okay? As far as I'm concerned, disparate bandying around and diplomacy and all of that kind of stuff works just fine. The problem is we have overriding forces that control all that kind of crap at the moment, and they're not working properly, as they should. And it's my take that this kind of corruption, grand scale, the people who accumulate large amounts of power, wealth, and influence tend to use that for their own ends. What do men with power want? They just want more power. And when I think about it, I think, well, why is it that people actually give other human beings inordinate amounts of power over large amounts of other people? You know, I mean, I can understand that perhaps a fire chief would be in control of a fire station, okay, because they need to have training, direction and such so that they can do an effective defense against fire in the city. I mean, back before there were fire brigades and things like that, people would just have to run out of their homes and grab buckets and whatever and try and save it the old-fashioned way. But they decided to get professional and get somebody in charge in every town of fighting fires. And that's what politicians are supposed to be. They're basically supposed to be the social firefighters. If there really is a big effing problem, like unemployment's out of control, or bribery and corruption's out of control, or basically, only if there's a crisis, supposedly some politician will produce a solution. Now, in principle, I have no disagreement with that. The problem is, they created the crisis for which they're promoting the solutions, which inordinately give them more power and influence over the rest of us. Or at least that's my take, and I could be wrong. And I certainly hope I am, but I don't think so. That's why the elections are all a sham. That's why you'll never actually ever get a say in this kind of thing. I mean, be realistic. Understand the limitations on yourself. You are incapable of being represented by somebody who doesn't know you, who has nothing in common with you. That's my feeling on it. I would never, ever dare to represent anybody else. You know, I represent me and only me, because I do and say things that a lot of people just don't want to be associated with. And that's quite understandable. Because I'm not very polite sometimes. The difficulty, of course, for me, is that I have to live here in this world. And I see it going to the dogs. I truly do. It's clearly evident by any form of statistical or scientific or historical analysis that this world truly is run by sociopathic psychos who want all the power and money for themselves. Okay? That is something that people need to get through their minds first and foremost. Don't underestimate the power of propaganda. And what would a whole bunch of sociopathic psychos do if they had all the money, all the media, all the medicine, and all the military, and all the M&Ms as well, incidentally? They would try to take you over. First in your mind, and then, if that doesn't work, they're going to have to take you out in reality. That's the thing about when you speak out, there's various methods of control that they use on you. And I do want to delve into this subject because of the fact that is now, to my mind, and I haven't been experiencing this for a long time, now seems to be happening a lot more to patriots and truthers and stuff all over the place. They're getting set up. Set up in a number of ways. Number one, false police intrusion. Come onto your property for something like a power bill, which you've had a dispute about, but have already paid, in fact, overpaid. And then when you tell them to get off your property, because there's no reason for them to be there and they're trespassing, they bludgeon you, make your head bleed in front of your pregnant wife. Okay? That's one method that gets used. Another method that gets used is threatening phone calls, threatening either yourself or your family. If that doesn't work, then perhaps they'll call protective services and they'll have somebody come and take your children. As happened to Christy from Truth Brigade Radio, God bless her, who had her kids taken away from her on the anniversary of her show, first year on air, while she was freaking live, police come into her house and take her girls off her. There's other methods as well. Abusive emails. I've received a few. And like I mentioned before, copious quantities of abusive stuff on YouTube. The whole central theme here is to make you feel hated, insecure, and isolated. They make you feel hated because they spread all this hate on you. You're a scum. You're an oxygen thief. You're a degenerate. You don't have the right to say anything. Do you like that? That was my Henry Kissinger voice. We were bringing about the New World Order. And I noticed something about Kissinger. Has anybody else noticed that when he speaks, have you ever heard that, like in the 70s or something, there was a rumor going around that when you played records backwards, they could hear the voice of Satan coming through those records, and it sounded exactly like Henry Kissinger. Like, seriously, you could be playing backwards Ozzy Osbourne and it'll come out, "There's a need for a new world order, and we will destroy everybody who resists us with vaccines and technological weaponry and biological weapons that we will release into the population via subway systems." You know, this is well, maybe not. Maybe that's my imagination running wild. But, you know, I just see the whole thing about the New World Order and the fight against them as simultaneously an incredibly serious topic. Most serious, conceivably have with anybody. And in fact, you can have conversations with people and in mid-sentence, they won't say anything. They will get up and they will walk away. Okay? What type of talk that is of, you know, delivered in a reasonable type talking fashion? You're not going crazy or yelling or screaming or anything. What type of behavior requires somebody to literally just leave the room because they just can't deal with this? It's happened to me a couple of times, actually. Might be a pattern. Apparently in the intelligence world, it's very different from the real world. In the real world, if something happens, it's an incident. If that thing happens twice, it becomes a coincidence. And if it happens three times, it is a pattern. And in the CIA, the modus operandi is if there is one incident, it's treated as enemy action, as a pattern. Instant. That's how they work. How is it that a society like ours can cope with a form of tyranny like that? I'm not sure if that's possible. But then again, humans have lived under worse reigns of terror before, and humanity survived. But of course this goes on to the whole doomsday side of it. How many frickin' doomsdays have you survived? I think I must have survived like, I don't know, 8 or something. Seriously, there was the Nostra dumbass prediction in like 99 or whatever. There was this recent Prophet Messiah, who apparently got it wrong for the second time after blowing copious quantities of money and performing a huge psyop on the whole of humanity of how they would respond to a predicted apocalypse. And you know, as everybody assuredly would, they thought that it was just the crazy ramblings of a madman. And as it turns out, they were right on the money. This showed enormous strength for me, because it means that there's at least some common sense and intelligence out there in the human race still that resists the programming nature of our system. Get up in the morning, switch on the TV, get the morning news, get in your car, you switch on the radio, and you get the morning news again. And it's the exact same news. How interesting. And then you go into work, you have all that pre-programmed stuff that you have to do. Lists and tasks and this, that, and the other. Unquestioning authority. Of course, you have to have no back chat or anything to a customer on the phone or to your boss. Because you could face reprimand. You could face a complaint. Or if you expose the company for doing a criminal practice, you'll probably get fired and maybe have a few other terrible things happen to you. As has happened to me and many other people. Why is it that everybody's got a bad story about their work life, but nobody's connected the dots that working in itself is a big trick? I mean, I understand the need to make money, but what are you creating? What are you manufacturing or bringing into existence when you're just like a clerk at a store? You're not doing much at all. That's the problem we've got. There's this kind of slave culture society where nobody knows how to make anything. Nobody's got the creativity it takes to, say, compose a musical score just, you know, by tapping a few bars on a computer keyboard. You know? Shoot, man. making beautiful works of art and whatnot ain't that difficult. It's going to take the time to do it, preferably by watching less television. A study has just come out that New Zealanders are sleeping longer and watching more hours of television. Hold on a second. Nobody's feeling more rested, though. And nobody's getting any better informed. You'd figure with a statistic like that, one would think that, hey, maybe everybody's a little bit more medicated. Can't turn off the TV soon enough. Doped up in a deeper sleep or whatever. Now that's just my total cynical assumption, of course, and it's probably wrong. But you get the idea. Probably not too far off. You know, living in a toxic soup, this society here, man. It's ridiculous. You know, in a word, our society is effing ridiculous. Nothing makes any sense. It's all mad. You know why? It was run by madmen. And the reason why they've been getting away with running it like madmen for so freaking long is because you're not a crazy person. You don't think like they do. You don't think that taking control of a city and a society and building this big eugenics empire and executing people by their millions in camps and pre-planning this decades in advance so that you've got enough body bags stockpiled to put the half the American population into a furnace. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back after the break.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No one like me.
Yeah. Keeping it Bankster on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Speaking of Bankster, my very special guest, Vince Seymour. Welcome to the show, mate.
A good day to you, whatever time it is there, Vinnie.
Yeah, well, I think it's like it's 11:22 a.m. over here, and I believe it's like, I don't know, like 6 o'clock for you or something.
Yeah,
a little
after 6, yeah.
Yeah, about 20 6 past 6 p.m., you know, like yesterday.
I'm ready to go to bed.
Yeah. Well, I see that 2 weeks ago you had a wee trial based upon you breaching a suppression order. Now, there's these big terror trials, ladies and gentlemen, that took place in New Zealand in October a couple of years back. And basically, the judge ruled that 7 out of the 9 warrants issued for these so-called terror trial raids where they pointed guns at children's heads were ruled unlawful. And then the judge unlawfully sealed the judgment and said nobody could report on his judgment. And so Vince Seymour, obviously not being a spineless, worthless leech on society, did report on this, and now they're trying to freaking throw him in jail. Is that about the size of it, Vince?
Well, yeah, there's a little bit of a twist to it. The Court of Appeal actually overruled the High Court judge, saying that, yeah, all the land search warrants were valid. That was on the application or the appeal of the Crown. So now we have a situation where all those have been declared legal after the lower court judges said they weren't. But it's very interesting because you said a couple years back, it's actually time's flying. It was October 2007 that our news was consumed with our own version of 9/11, and that was that 18 terrorists, homegrown terrorists, had been arrested and held without bail. And they appeared in the dock, and we had a judge, her name was Helen Winkleman, a high court judge, in revoking bail on the one that was granted bail, and he was only out for one day, said she actually read comments from the affidavit about how he was declaring war on this country. And she said that was proof of how dangerous he was, and presumably that the presumption of innocence ought not apply to these people. What was interesting is, because the public was shielded from this, they didn't know what the police evidence was or wasn't. I was one of the few at the time who actually was slipped a copy of it, of the police evidence, and it was, quite frankly, largely contrived. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on, but these people were not terrorists. In fact, they, to set the record straight, they aren't now charged as terrorists. They're charged with arms violations and a novel twist on the law. The police are charging some of them as participating in an organized crime group. But it's quite interesting because the public isn't seeing even the trial itself, what's going on. This trial, well, the trial itself hasn't occurred, but the procedural move, one of which you mentioned was the suppression of the suppression of the judgment that actually determined that a lot of the police warrants were unlawful. The public's not hearing this. I'm printing it, and I'm facing prison for it. And like you mentioned, 2 weeks ago, there was a two-day trial in Wellington for contempt of court for breach of a suppression order. And the judges have reserved their decision, and this will be the second time, if they go through with it, that I'm going to be in prison for this kind of breaching of suppression orders. It was very interesting. My lawyer stood up before the court, and he said, there's no provision for a judge to suppress a judgment in a criminal trial. He said, he says that under the Crimes or the Criminal Procedures Act, a judge can suppress certain evidence, certain submissions, and the names of parties to protect witnesses and that. There's no provision under the Act. And more pertinently, the Act says unless there's provisions under that Act or similar legislation, a judge can't suppress anything further. So he stood up at court and he said to the judges, and this really made him angry, but I tell you, he's a very gutsy lawyer, one of the few, because most of them are quite subservient to the authority from the bench. He said, well, the judge has actually been acting unlawful that issued the suppression orders. Mr. Seamer should be applauded because he's the one that's holding the judge to account. Mr. Seamer hasn't broken the law. What you're saying is he's breached a judge's order to suppress something that wasn't lawful.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's like, I suppress you. I suppress you again. They're like these evil Mexican Comanchero kind of people. I'm surprised they weren't wearing ponchos with gargantuan mustaches riding into the courtroom on horseback with a blanket on top. You know? Come on.
Well, it was worse than that. They were wearing black robes.
Oh. Were they wearing pointy hats too?
Well, you don't know. That's coming next. I don't know. It's getting so bad. You mentioned about the land search warrants, which is interesting enough. I mean, this is quite serious. 18 people were held without bond for a month. They weren't given the opportunity to have bail. Do you know that on WikiLeaks, there's a document that says the U.S. Embassy in Wellington was advised 2 months after the raid and all these people being held in prison without bail, that they're unlikely to face custodial sentences. So the New Zealand government is advising the U.S. Embassy that despite the fact that we're being told as citizens of New Zealand that these people are terrorists, that privately the police are telling the embassy, oh, well, these aren't really terrorists. They're not likely to face custodial sentences. Now, that begs a lot of questions about how serious we need to look at the authority here, but another question that pops up is, why are they advising the U.S. this? Well, it's interesting. Since 9/11, there's been a proliferation of legislation around the world to suppress quote-unquote terrorism. And New Zealand passed its own Terrorist Suppression Act in 2002, so they were pretty quick off the mark. As a result of that, whenever terror at home hits the country, the U.S. is quick to offer assistance. presumably on the assumption that there's a real terrorism there. So I don't know if because of these elite cops that were trained right after that, that all of a sudden they have to show their muscle. But lo and behold, 5 years, almost a day after the Terrorist Suppression Act was passed in New Zealand, we have this elite training group rounding up 35 people and holding 18 of them without bail. And worse, the New Zealand public knows nothing about it. Interestingly enough, this trial 2 weeks ago and why I'm facing prison now is because I actually reported that this judge, Winkleman, has now determined that these people can't, these 18 defendants can't have trial by jury. And that's a very serious road to ruin.
Yeah. Well, they're actually abolishing juries left, right, and center, even for general crimes and things of that nature. I believe if the sentence is less than, what is it, 2 years? 7 years?
There's talk. It hasn't happened with legislation yet. So far, it's been by judicial fiat. In fact, the law actually says under the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act and under the Crimes Act that someone facing more than 6 months prison is entitled by right to a trial by jury. We have not had, and also in the civil trials, the Judicature Act says that under Section 42A, that anybody suing for civil damages and only civil damages can elect a trial by jury, a plaintiff can, or a defendant, for that matter. We haven't had a civil trial by jury in New Zealand in, I want to say, 5 years.
What?
Yeah, there hasn't been one. It's all been by judge alone. And the problem with that in a small country where all the judges are related, so, you know, we talk about the 1 degree or 2 degrees of New Zealand, and judges, it's like a fraction of a degree. They're all related.
Speaking of degrees, can I ask you something? Freemasons New Zealand have a policy where basically it's mostly only people that you're related to that will be let in or invited to be members of the Freemason organization. And apparently there's high-level Freemasons in the court system as well. Have you heard of this?
I hear it all the time. I don't really know much about the Freemasons, the group in that. Of course, I think that organization is by its nature secretive. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm just saying that if it is that way, that could explain why I know very little about it. So I'm not really the one to ask about it because I just don't know. I've heard it alleged, but I can't confirm it because I just don't know enough.
Well, fair enough. Well, the fact that they're all related.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's
literally first cousins and such like that is bad enough on its own.
Well, get this. I mean, think about it. I mean, I know New Zealand, 4 million people, small. But think of this. There's like 50 judges on the High Court, Court of Appeal, and Supreme Court combined. Of that, we have a husband and wife, Simon and Ellen France. We have two brothers, Warwick and David Gendel, I think. Yeah, so there's two brothers. And we've got like three of them that are like first cousins, O'Regan, White, and Wild. So they're all like at the grandparents' level. They go to the same get-togethers. I mean, it's astounding how closely. Well, it's very incestuous. I mean, I don't use that word often, but it's such an incestuous bunch. It's hard to get away from it. And litigants who come, defendants, especially in this Bailey case, if they're facing the power of the state and you've got these state-appointed actors on the bench, they're not going to get a fair trial. In fact, the judge, in denying them trial by jury, which, again, I got to emphasize, is their statutory right, but the judge has nonetheless denied them the right, and she did so on two bases. And, of course, you can't know this because we in New Zealand aren't allowed to know this because it's suppressed. But The one is that the jury is likely to use improper reasoning processes. Now, what does that sound like? Sounds pretty
scary. It sounds like somebody's reasoning process is so rigid that they can't see the forest for the trees, making a judgment on somebody else.
Exactly. You know, so the whole purpose of why juries have been important since Magna Carta, going back 400 or more years, has now been discounted by a New Zealand judge who says, the people will get a New Zealand and a jury are going to be too stupid. They can't figure it out for themselves.
Well, see, I didn't know that, Vince. That, you know, that, I mean, the fact
not
that this...
To know that.
Well, the fact that this big, high-profile trial is being suppressed for a jury... I mean, what happened with Clayton Weatherston and all of these other people? I mean, didn't they have juries, or was it all judicial fiat anyway, and the jury was just ornamental?
No, I don't think that's the case. But the judge gives the mandate to the jury. People don't realize that a jury is only given the factual determination. The arguments on the legal issues are entirely between the judge. The judge makes those. Determines that after submission to the counsel. So the jury is only asked to make a factual determination in the case of the Witherston thing. Did he murder it? And was he guilty of murder in doing that? That's the determination. In this Bailey case, they're going to be asked only, well, did they violate the Arms Act? And were they participating in an organized gang in accordance with the law? Well, why can't they determine that? I mean, that's insulting, really, to the people who be called on the jury for a judge to say that. And then to suppress it so people aren't allowed to know that she's denied them trial by jury, let alone the reasons for it, is quite appalling. It's interesting because somebody made this point a couple weeks ago that... Now that the WikiLeaks document is out, that these people have been, the police have told the U.S. Embassy that they're not likely to face incarceration, the government has a lot of backside covering because these people have already spent a month in jail without bail. So what are they going to do? Well, I can tell you the cozy relationship is they have a judge on the bench who's friendly to the government and is going to find them guilty of something so they don't come back and want compensation for being falsely imprisoned. And that's how it's going to happen. If it ever goes to trial, and of course that's a good point, it's been 3.5 years now, coming up on 4, and the earliest trial date is now going to be next February, so it'll be close to 4.5 years at the earliest before they come to trial. What's that about? Justice delayed is justice denied. They got to wait 3.5 years to get a trial.
People don't freaking realize the stress that gets put on a person when something like that is hanging over you. You can't make plans. You can't do anything with the rest of your life until all that crap is lifted. And this is what a lot of the people in Christchurch are now thinking about. Apparently, soon enough, the Prime Minister is going to talk about how the suburbs are going to be divvied up and some are going to be completely demolished and abandoned. And the people living there... just want to know.
Exactly.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
That's right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide. It's all about just a little bit of history repeating, because it seems that, legally speaking, we're going back to the Middle Ages. with all the incest, inquests, and must be a Freudian slip there, into the judicial system with my very special guest, Vince Seymour from KiwisFirst.com, K-I-W-I-S, first.com. Vince Seymour, welcome back from break.
Thank you, Benny.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything more to add?
No, you spelled it correctly, Kiwis First. No, KiwisFirst.co.nz as well, but either way, for those at home. Anyway, it's a mirrored site. But there is a story up on Kiwis First having to do with the Operation 8 trial. And I'm half expecting them to try to... they can't shut down the site because it's actually hosted out of the UK. But I half expect them to charge me again for contempt for breaching of suppression orders over that article. And it's interesting... I'm the only one that's facing legitimate prison out of this whole ordeal. If you take the WikiLeaks communication to the U.S. Embassy at face value. And you know, the other party that was prosecuted, and I mentioned the article, was the Dominion Post. They were that case of contempt brought by the Solicitor General was dismissed in 2008. But it was interesting how quickly that trial eventuated. That happened within a month. But these 18 people are still waiting, coming up in 4 years. And you're right, Vinny, what they're asked to do is put their life on hold when they're facing criminal charges. But it's actually worse in this case, and it's despicable. These people were branded as terrorists. Until they get their day in court, there'll always be a significant portion of the public to think that they're terrorists. And
even if they get off, there'll still be a significant portion of the public that still think they're terrorists because they're terrorists. You know, it's out of freaking control because as soon as the media launches into anybody and accuses anybody of anything at any time, that person will be branded for life.
It's very hard to do. But a sense of vindication comes at the trial, doesn't it? And if they're denied that through inordinate delays, then that's an injustice in and of itself. I mean, you've got young people involved, many of them. Of course, the ages range from, I think, 19 up to late 50s in age. So there's a broad spectrum of people who fall in this trial. But just think of the younger ones in particular who out there trying to look for work and, you know, got the stigma. Oh, you know, you're facing what started off as terrorism charges, and now it's been brought down to a another charge, but nah, I don't think we want to talk to you. I mean, it's just terrible to have that burden and carry it for so long. And that's the injustice that I'm trying to bring to the fore, is that the court system is doing it. They're doing this in a vacuum where the public can't know in what has to be the largest and most expensive prosecution in New Zealand's history, and we don't know what's going on. It's all happening in secret. And, you know, justice has to be seen to work. That's the whole purpose of the public and transparent court.
Well, isn't there just a point here that really needs to be addressed? Is that don't people have the right to a fair and speedy trial so that their entire lives don't get messed up in the process for a very long time?
Well, sure, that's the whole reason behind the axiom that justice delayed is justice denied for that very reason. And that, you know, justice as is occurring in the court must be seen to be done. And that can only happen if it's transparent. But we have none of that. It's a total void. And I call the New Zealand courts a black hole of truth. What happens in quite regularly, and again, people don't see it because files get suppressed and sealed by order of the judge, and the public can't search unless the judge gives a leave or reason to do it. That oftentimes in these cases, and it happened in mine, I was sued for defamation, and the black and white defense was that I had the documents in the guy's own name, Michael C. Astney's own hand, and that of his lawyer. And what the judge said is, well, no, we can't accept that evidence because it was obtained through discovery in another case. Well, that wasn't true. I mean, it was my lawyer. I'm entitled to the files. If it didn't come as a result of discovery in another case, it was a very related proceeding. So that, but a judge used that because it turns out, again, to show how incestuous it is, the guy who sued me, four of his former lawyers, four of the 11 judges on the bench were his former lawyer. What kind of fair trial am I going to get, or anybody gets for that matter, when someone who's suing you has employed four of the 11 judges on the court?
I'm wondering why you're even bothering to turn up, Vince, quite honestly.
Well, that's a good point. People have told me not to. I said, you know, it's... And my lawyer made a very good point, the last one. He said, you know, it's a show trial. He says, this is a show trial. This is to send a message to the public that this man has done something wrong and don't do what he's done, even though what he's done is totally within the law and it's a judge who out of the law.
But the public won't have any idea unless the media get involved, and they rarely get involved unless, of course, you wear a Alice in Wonderland dress.
Well, that's true. And then they won't report on the facts. They'll just report on the novelty of what's occurring. I had a... this guy was a... I think he's still out there. His name's Tony Stickley. He's a poor excuse for a reporter, but he was an editor for the New Zealand Herald. He told me a number of years ago that they don't report on powerful people in New Zealand because they will get sued. So they will not report... He didn't say this specifically. I'm saying this. They won't report the truth because they'll get sued. When I said to him, well, this is important news and it's accurate, he said, it doesn't matter. He says, even when we're correct, we'll still have to pay $100,000 in legal bill. It's just not worth it. So what you get splashed on the front cover is...
all of the poor people that get hooked up with drugs and alcohol that all the rich people feed to them.
Well, exactly. Or somebody runs off the road and hits a tree, or somebody's, some so-called celebrity is hooked up with somebody else and that becomes a full front page. I mean, we're just...
Yeah. Somebody's pet goat has been stolen in a shy rural community.
And the kids are heartbroken because their beloved pet is gone. This is the type of news that we get. We don't get any news about these 18 people who are charged with terrorism, held without bail, and the press won't do it because it's too expensive. But they get chewed up in the courts as much as anybody if they print what the courts don't want them to print. And in my case, this guy's suing me for defamation, and he won, by the way. He won $1 million, which is just ridiculous. So I show that everything's correct, and the judge says, no, that's all suppressed. And then the court issues a press release of his judgment finding me guilty. Now, they don't do that with every judgment. They did it in my case because they're sending a message. Free speech is expensive. That's the message they want to send. Free speech is expensive. And free speech may silence false speech, but it definitely silences true speech. And that's what more and more people are realizing.
And free speech has become somewhat of an illusion, or it's something that you have to kind of create and spread yourself, because, hey, you won't get any help.
Well, that's true. And I think that's why people are increasingly going to the internet for their news. Very few people watch, you know, the TV news now. I mean, that's a fact.
Or at least very few people watch it seriously.
Yeah, it's background noise while they're eating or fixing dinner or something, or doing something else. But
it's funny you should say that, because one of the guests on the show, Mary Byrne from the Fluoride Action Network in Wellington, said that I should do like a nightly at 6 o'clock kind of 30-minute news blitz, so that she could listen to it while she was cooking dinner.
Yeah, that'd be a great idea.
Yeah,
people need more options in that time slot.
Yeah. Absolutely. It needs to be done, gosh dang it. But the problem is everybody will need to have like satellite TV or cable TV or something along those lines. Or if you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and click on the Alternative Media Network banner there, we now have a conspiracy underground news network channel, and my television show is playing on that. It's a 28-minute show. So there you have it, or at least that's a step in the right direction. In terms of making a nightly show, we'd have to just destroy the mainstream media, wouldn't we? Just break them down every day and tell people the truth. And that,
I think they're destroying themselves.
Indeed. All right, thanks, Vince, for coming on the show with me today. KiwisFirst.co.nz, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Vince.
Thanks, or .com.
Right. Catch you later, mate. And catch you later, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you tomorrow on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.